Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're opening up a really fascinating and honestly deeply unsettling file from Appalachian history.
We are. It's the story of Howie DeWitt, his two-year disappearance, and, well, his very unnerving return.
Yeah, so our mission today is to really dig into every recorded detail of this whole event. It started back in 1939, West Virginia.
Right.
And we really want to focus on the specific almost impossible physical and behavioral anomalies that were reported when he came back in 1941.
And this deep dive is just full of contradictions, isn't it? We're using the sources we have, family accounts, bits from local papers, even some brief doctor's notes.
Trying to sort out the facts from, well, the folklore that sprung up around it.
Exactly. Because at the heart of it, you have these two specific physical things that just, they seem to break the laws of identity. They don't make sense.
We should probably start with that quote, the one that's kind of anchors the whole story. It's from the source material, and it's just chilling.
It really sets the tone.
West Virginia, 1939. A miner falls and vanishes. In 1941, he comes home, and nothing inside him comes with him.
That phrase, nothing inside him comes with him. It really captures that sense of emptiness.
Yeah.
Vacancy.
That's what we need to unpack, that feeling.
Yeah, and you know what's really interesting here is we're not just looking at a survival story. I mean, surviving 2 years trapped in a mine, that's already basically impossible.
Right.
We're actually studying a complete irreversible transformation. Seems like the environment that took Howie DeWitt, it gave back something fundamentally changed.
Altered.
Yeah, altered. A body carrying physical evidence that suggests, well, not just recovery, but maybe repair. Or something stranger.
Okay, so we need to look really closely at those details then. The stitches on his jaw.
And critically, that hand. The impossible hand. That might tell us something about those two missing years.
All right, let's dive in. We need to set the scene first, because the environment itself, it feels like the first character here. West Virginia, 1939.
Deep coal country.
Yeah, and life there is just, it's defined by the rhythm of mining, isn't it? Grueling work underground.
Oh, absolutely. The context is just, it's crucial here. Think about 1939. A miner's family, they lived with this constant low-level anxiety.
Always in the background.
Exactly. Their whole life sort of revolved around risks, didn't it? You had the coal dust every morning packing that lunch pail.
And hoping.
The real measure of safety, the thing that lets you breathe easy, was hearing those boots on the porch at the end of the day.
That sound meant everything was okay. Certainty.
Yeah. And if those boots didn't come home, the silence, well, the whole community knew exactly what that meant.
And Howie DeWitt was part of this world, a husband, a father. His life was tied to that darkness he went into every single day.
So when the accident happened, it wasn't just a personal tragedy. It was like a shared fear made real for everyone.
The sources say he was working deep underground, slipped, and fell down a shaft.
Which, in a coal mine, that's usually it.
Yeah.
Game over. Instantaneous, final. And the response confirms that, you know, they launched rescue attempts right away. His own crew, fellow miners who knew those tunnels.
They went down.
They searched, worked like hell. But, you know, after trying everything standard, the mountain itself, the depth, the instability of that shaft, it was just too much.
They couldn't reach him.
Nope. To everyone's knowledge, professional and communal, he was gone. Irretrievable.
And then comes this agonizing wait that turns into years. Why am I talking days or weeks here?
Two full years, 1939 to 1941.
We really have to stress how huge that span of time is. For the family, that initial shock, it just settled into this long, quiet grief.
One source actually said the house had to learn to keep quiet in its sorrow. That's, wow.
Yeah. They held a memorial. They accepted it. They learned to live with that silence where Howie used to be.
And from a survival standpoint, 2 years down a deep, probably abandoned mine shaft. It just, it strains belief past the breaking point.
It does.
Think about it. Pitch black, damp, unstable rock, no food, no water. Well, maybe a pocket of water, but for 2 years.
People survive underground for days, maybe weeks if they're incredibly lucky.
Exactly. 2 years is, well, it feels biologically impossible under anything like normal circumstances.
So that sets up the big problem for us, doesn't it? If the rescue teams were right, if he was truly unreachable and presumed dead.
And they tried everything.
Right. Then the question isn't really how he survived. It's where was he? What was happening for those 700 plus days?
Because the evidence starts to suggest he was somehow outside the normal rules of survival, at least how we understand deep earth environments.
The mind takes things, resources, lives. It doesn't usually give them back.
Almost never. So when it does give something back 2 years later, against all odds, you have to look really closely at what exactly came back.
It makes you question everything about the initial accident.
Absolutely. It challenges that finality.
It's the perfect setup for something truly strange. They buried his memory, his ghost.
And then, 2 years later, something walks out of the dark.
So, fast forward two winters, it's 1941, the impossible happens. A different shift of miners, working somewhere else in the mine.
They stumble across a figure, just staggering through the tunnels.
The initial description is just bizarre.
Right. Covered in fine coal dust? Okay, that makes sense. But his whole demeanor, dazed, vacant eyes, stumbling around, it wasn't just exhaustion.
No, it sounded like emptiness. Profound disorientation.
Yeah, like he was physically there,
yeah,
but the lights weren't on inside, the personality, any spark of recognition, just gone.
And then they managed to ask him his name and his response. And this is the part that always gets me.
Thanks, Jim.
According to the sources, he just whispers this phrase, "That is I."
That is I, not I am Howie.
Exactly. Let's just sit with that for a second. If you've been tracked for 2 years, you'd scream your name, right? Yes, it's me, Howie, get me out.
You'd expect desperation, emotion, relief,
right.
Something. But that is I. It's so clinical. Objective.
Like he's confirming a fact about an object, not stating who he is?
Yeah, it's like he still had the data points. The name Howie DeWitt, maybe the history.
Yeah.
But the actual I, the self, the person experiencing it, maybe he wasn't there anymore.
The man returned, but maybe not the essence.
Something like that.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate ambiguity. He knows the label.
But doesn't seem to own the identity. So they rush him to the infirmary, treat him for shock, obvious things.
But they send him home. Can you imagine that moment for the family? Speechless, relief, horror, just utter confusion.
And that's when the strangeness really ramps up back in the house.
Right. Family's expecting this huge emotional reunion, tears, joy, exhaustion.
And they get nothing. A void. The sources keep saying something was profoundly off right from the start.
The expected emotions just never happened.
And his behavior afterwards just created this intense friction at home. He was completely disconnected.
Didn't speak, didn't smile.
And the blinking thing, or lack of blinking, so unnerving. He barely seemed to see his wife or kids.
The very people you'd think he fought to get back to.
That lack of blinking,
mm-hmm.
What does that suggest? Neurological damage, maybe.
Could be. Severe shock, a dissociative state after, you know, sensory deprivation for so long. That's the clinical possibility.
Okay.
But symbolically, it suggests maybe he just couldn't engage with surface reality anymore. Mm. Like he was just observing, operating on some basic level, but not participating.
Watching, but not connecting.
Yeah. But the detail that really became legendary, the defining image of his return.
The television.
The television. Sitting on the couch for hours every night. Staring right at the TV screen.
But the TV wasn't turned on.
Exactly. Just a blank, dark screen.
Why? Why the TV?
Well, that's the fascinating part, isn't it? TV is normally a window, right? Light, sound, connection to the world. It's just cold, black glass.
So why not stare at a wall if he's just catatonic or something?
That's the question. If it was just trauma, maybe a wall would do.
Mm-hmm.
But he chooses the screen. Now, you could argue maybe the blank screen just mirrored his internal state, right? Mm. The darkness inside.
That makes psychological sense. He's processing the void he experienced.
It does, and that's a valid read.
Yeah.
But given where he was, the mine shaft, the ultimate absolute darkness, it's hard not to see a connection.
So you think he's staring into something represented by the screen?
Maybe.
Well.
Like he's trying to look into a depth of reflection or memory
right.
That's even deeper than the mind itself. You know, sometimes with sensory deprivation, the mind projects things onto whatever's there.
So the screen becomes his internal darkness made visible?
Perhaps. Like he brought the visual silence, the emptiness of the mind right into the living room. He's still watching the deep, even though he's out.
Wow. That turns the TV into something else entirely. A portal back to the darkness.
Or just a mirror of it. And his silence, the words he won't say, just adds to that feeling that he wasn't just Howie anymore. He was guarding some terrible knowledge from down there.
Okay, so that's the behavior. Deeply weird, maybe explainable by extreme trauma, maybe not. But now we get to the physical evidence.
Right. And this is where things go from unsettling to, well, physically impossible. This is the core of it.
This is where the family's confusion must have turned into real dread. The man who came back wasn't physically the same.
The first big shock came when his wife noticed his jaw. She was just trying to wake him for dinner, a normal, everyday thing.
And she sees something under his beard, hidden by the dust and grime.
Stitches along his jawline. And the description is key here. Thick, uneven, almost surgical.
Okay, let's break that down. Surgical implies...
What?
Instruments, skill, intent.
Gentle repair, yeah. Precision, maybe even sterile conditions. Not something you'd expect in a collapsed mine.
But then thick and uneven, that sounds like the opposite. Crude, clumsy, done in a hurry.
Exactly. It's a contradiction. If he just had cuts from the fall, they might heal badly, sure. But surgical suggests someone tried to fix him.
Who? Or what? Why the jaw? Was it to help him breathe? Eat.
Could be. Maybe damage from the fall needed urgent repair. But if it was another person, a rescuer, why didn't they come out too? And why the crudeness alongside the surgical aspect?
It suggests the conditions were extreme. Maybe amateur work. Or maybe something not operating by our rules.
Whatever it was, it's solid proof that something happened to him down there. Uh-huh. He wasn't just waiting. His body was actively worked on, manipulated.
That's disturbing enough, but it's nothing compared to the second piece of physical evidence, is it?
No. This is the one that just blows everything else out of the water.
Yeah.
The absolute irreconcilable contradiction.
His hand. His wife looks at his left hand.
And realizes it has all five fingers.
Which sounds normal, except...
Except Howie DeWitt had lost his pinky finger in a mining accident 7 years before he disappeared in 1939.
This wasn't a secret. It was a known fact, a defining feature of the man, part of his history as a miner.
Right. And this detail, it just shatters any simple explanation like amnesia or mistaken identity.
How can the man who comes back look like Howie, know his name, know his address, but have a body part restored that's been missing for 7 years?
You can't just chalk that up to trauma. This is physical replacement or some kind of impossible regeneration.
Now, could the wife have been wrong, misremembered?
Highly unlikely. A missing finger, especially on a miner's hand, that's something you notice, something the family, the community would absolutely know. And medical records might be flawed, maybe.
Possible, I guess, back then, remote area.
But the collective memory, probably solid. That clean five-fingered hand is like a forged document denying his entire past.
It's terrifying on a different level. That missing pinky wasn't just an injury. It was part of who he was, a record of his life, his work.
And the thing that came back, it didn't just ignore that history. It erased it, presented this perfect, unmarked version.
Which suggests whatever process he went through either didn't recognize the injury as Howie or deliberately corrected him, made him whole again, but wrong.
And that's the tension, isn't it? The body is wrong, repaired, perfected even. But the mind, or at least the surface data, whispers, that is I.
How?
Was the consciousness transferred? Or just enough data copied onto a new chassis?
We don't know. But that restored hand is the absolute smoking gun. Undeniable proof of something deeply strange, maybe non-human, happening during those 2 years.
So you've got the vacant stare, the weird jaw stitches, and the impossible hand. It all points to displacement.
Yeah. The man who came home was like an artifact. He had the right labels, but the substance, the history, was gone.
So given all this, especially the hand, which seems irrefutable, how did the official reports handle it? The doctors, the authorities, they couldn't just ignore that.
Well, it seems like they kind of did, or at least they didn't engage with the wife's specific observations, the ones that didn't fit.
They stuck to what they could measure.
Pretty much. The doctor's notes we have mention exhaustion and shock, standard diagnosis for someone found after being lost, right? They noted his daze, his silence.
But not the stitches, not the extra finger.
Doesn't seem like it. Whether they didn't see them, didn't believe the wife, or just deliberately omitted things that didn't fit the narrative, we don't know. They saw the trauma of the return.
Well, the family saw the evidence of the process, the impossibility.
Exactly. So the official story basically just sidestepped the physical proof that this wasn't quite Howie.
Leaving the family to live with this silent stranger who looked like their husband and father, that gap between the official story and their reality must be where the folklore started.
That's precisely it. The community had to try and make sense of something impossible. Howie's back, but he's wrong. And when explanations failed, stories took over.
And we need to be clear here, right? The stitches, the hand, those are recorded details from the wife. The things that happen next, those are more like the legend forming.
Yes. The folklore elements are fascinating, though. They really focus on the home. Like the house itself became haunted by his return.
What kind of things did people say?
Well, some neighbors apparently claimed his old helmet lamp, his actual mining gear, would sometimes just flicker on its own in the living room at night, even unplugged.
Creepy.
And others said the blank TV screen, the one he stared at, it would sometimes hum loudly, even with no power going to it.
Okay, those are powerful images. The flickering lamp, like the mind's darkness is still present, still active in the
face. It feels symbolically, yeah.
Yeah.
And the humming TV. It's like the sound of that silent story, those two lost years trying to get out through the screen he watched.
Like the trauma itself broadcasting on a dead channel, the process he went through didn't stay underground. It leaked out.
It followed him home, started making its presence felt through the very things meant to connect him to the normal world.
If you step back, the whole Howie DeWitt story feels like a metaphor almost.
For what?
For how people can get swallowed by depths, you know? Physical ones like a mine or maybe psychological ones, trauma. And sometimes if they come back,
they bring something back with them, an echo that isn't really theirs.
Yeah. He's there, but not there. A mix of the man who fell and whatever. Whatever force brought this version back up.
And those core symbols really nail that duality, don't they? The coal dust, the trace of the environment, the vacant stare, the loss of humanity.
And the hand, the denial of his own past. Every piece points to this fundamental break. The man who fell and the thing that returned.
He was like a replacement part, wasn't he? Looked right, had the basic specs, the name, but the actual history, the wear and tear, the soul, it was missing.
And that silence, combined with the physical weirdness, just left his family living with this uncanny stranger, turning their relief into something awful.
Persistent, unsettling dread.
Yeah. So we've gone deep into this DeWitt case file, started with a missing minor, ended up with, well, an existential puzzle wrapped in impossible biology.
And just to recap the really key points for you, the listener, that restored pinky finger, that's the objective physical fact that shouts, this isn't the original Howie.
Can't argue with that.
And the psychological emptiness, the jaw stitches hinting at crude repair, the constant silent stare at nothing, it all suggests the essence of Howie, the person, never really made it back.
So we've laid out the evidence, the folklore that grew around it. But here's the question for you listening. What hits harder?
Cool proof, like the hand that just denies his history, his identity?
Or is it the behavioral stuff? The silence, the stare that denies his humanity, his connection to the people he loved?
For me, I think the hand is maybe more disturbing. Because it suggests a deliberate process.
How so?
Well, replacing a damaged part, it implies intent. Logic, almost. Yeah. Like whatever returned him tried to make him whole again, or maybe just tidier, less marked by life.
A corrected version?
Yeah. But in doing that, they erased him. Erased his actual life story written on his body.
See, I think the silence is more terrifying. It suggests that maybe, even if some part of Howie was still in there wanting to connect, it couldn't. Right. Trapped. He had the ability to speak, presumably. But the words explaining those 2 years just wouldn't come. He was stuck watching that reflection of the darkness he'd just left.
Which brings us back to that final image, doesn't it? The helmet lamp beam cutting across the dark room, the TV off. But someone's still watching.
The depth of the mine is still right there, reflected in the glass.
He came back to the right address.
The rest of him never made it up the shaft.
A truly chilling thought to end on. Thanks for sharing your sources and joining us on this deep dive into the man who came back wrong.
Yeah, thank you. Keep exploring those depths, everyone, even when the answers seem to contradict everything we think we know.